it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
In today's episode...
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Who are the best club sides of all time?
Dublin on a budget.
The Lord of the Rings looks rubbish. And when does LRZ get to hang out with Taylor Swift? Coley, mate, how was it?
It's really good, thank you, Ben. How are you?
I'm all right. Do you see the speed camera outside... The static van outside the training ground today?
Yeah, I did. But the fact that it was rush hour and I left the training ground today, so the lights were backed up like 400 metres, so no one was doing anything over 6 miles an hour. Obviously, I stayed later than you because I was doing like extras and stuff.
Well, big news on the traffic. My letter came through from obviously when I said about getting flashed up the M1, and it's given me three options, and I've decided to do the course. So I'm going to do the course to avoid the points. But I think it's like a 3 hour long course and I've booked it in for May.
And how many Easter eggs have you eaten?
Do you know what? Genuine now. I haven't had any. I know that might come as a bit of a surprise.
How many of the extras you get from inside the Easter eggs have you eaten?
None. Honestly, I've been incredible.
You've had no mini eggs?
I swear to God, I've not had any. I promise you. The kids got these baskets from the Easter Bunny. But they're all like little hoarders. I'm not allowed near any of it. Can't even get a bite, mate. Nothing.
Sad times.
You?
I've had half a Galaxy one. So we went away, that's what I had last week off, so we went away on Hollybob. So I had to buy a couple of Easter eggs beforehand for the kids. Did that and Mrs. And so I got Belle one, which we've shared, because that's nice. She didn't get me one, so I had to share hers. And then the boys were like, when's the Easter Bunny coming? I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, you know, the Easter egg hunt? I'm like, no. Like, you know, we need one, Daddy. I'm like, no. So... I've made you feel guilty all weekend about not doing an Easter egg hunt in the garden, which I'm over it, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. My kids are getting to the age now where they need to start learning some hard truths about what goes on.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's only so many egg hunts you can do and be dragged around with them to find the eggs for them. And then once they found that, to be fair, once they found it, they're not even bothered anyway, so.
It's also when you find the egg 4 months later when you do, like, cutting the grass and you're like, what's that shiny? Oh, for fuck's sakes.
I'll eat it anyway. Give it a little wipe down, it'll be fine. But how was Dubai?
It was really good, thank you, Ben. Yeah, it was last minute booking. It's cost me an arm and a leg, but it's probably saved my marriage because I've been away for 8 weeks in the Six Nations. Everyone's happy again. Part of my wife is now depressed that she's come back and she's not in Dubai anymore because it's really cool and the water park. And you know, you have the adrenaline spike and it's all sunny and happy. And then it's like, oh, it's the best holiday ever, which it was. It was an amazing family holiday. But so the whole thing is like, when you look at what's been built and the size of it and where it's been built, like in the desert and in the ocean, you're like, wow, this is actually some feat of engineering. I was the only one that appreciated that, obviously. Wife and kids, they were just bothered about going to have slides, which is all right. I met a few listeners of the pod. Some bloke came up to me. I was in, I think it's Saffron. I was the all-you-can-eat buffet. I'm loading up my plate and some bloke's like, I listened to the Ollie Chesham episode this morning in the gym. I was laughing my tits off. I'm like, cool. I'm just going to put this plate aside. Don't judge me.
This isn't my plate.
It's for the family. It's for the, yeah, this is, it, I'm just getting a lot of stuff for the group, the family. And then I had another bloke come up to me in the, we were queuing for one of the rides and he's like, oh, is this a better queue than on the M1? I'm like, yeah, it is, yeah. There are less steps on the M1, mind, and I've had to walk up 300 to get here, but so I'm slightly less out of breath on the M1 normally, but no, this is a better queue. Then you come back and it's like, I'm straight back to work. She's just on East Holloway with the kids. It's like, oh, can we go back? I'm like, oh, it's just bit me in the ass.
Yeah.
Should never have gone. And now all the kids are like, we get to go back, Daddy. I'm like, yeah, we'll be spending your inheritance to go back, kids. So yeah, that's fine. Fine by me.
Oh, mate, so last week as well, we had, when you were sunning yourself in Dubai, I was out grafting, mate, and we had a little open session. I had a bit of a disaster. I sometimes get these heart palpitations, as you know, and the session's finished, and you know there's probably 70 people strong that have come in and watched the team train, and it's horizontal rain, and I've gone into the corner to do a bit of conditioning. Off I go, and I'm running, I'm moving well, mate. I'm gliding, getting to the ball, ball's moving away, rain's not putting me off, coming out of the hands nicely, run to the next one. Anyway, so I'm doing this drill for a while. We're about halfway through, and then we start the next rep, and then literally my heart goes into the palpitations, which occasionally happens to me, and I suddenly felt unbelievably faint. So I sort of said to him, I'm not right, sort of crouched down, can you go and get a medic? Which he ran off, and I sat there and I thought, oh my God, what a way to go. I'm at Matty Hurley Woods, Welford Road. It's horizontal rain. I've just done a conditioning block. There's 70 people that have come to watch. There's someone holding up a hat with the love of rugby. And I'm sprawled out and nearly taking my last breath. But turns out I was absolutely fine. And the ticker's all good. So you also missed that, mate. It was nearly a huge event.
You know, if you would have, say, the worst had happened there and you'd have died. Do you know when people say, oh, he died doing something he loved? Do you think that would be... Would that have been appropriate? Would that have been apt for that moment? Or don't really like conditioning. It's miserable weather. No, I can think of better places to die.
I think if you did my eulogy, mate, and you stood up and you said, he went out doing something he loved, fitness, in horizontal rain, at the end of the day, in front of 70 people.
It was performed on the big stage. No, mate, that's, yeah, something to think about. Anyway, we'll move on to the questions.
Let me stress, I'm absolutely fine, you know, because I know a lot of people will be worried now, you know?
Yeah, they are. No,
and you're really concerned. Yeah.
Well, I am, because we've got a busy week upcoming, haven't we, Ben, which is a question from Rory.
Yeah.
Which is, what's your schedule for this weekend? How similar is it to playing against Ireland in Dublin? Because obviously Leicester Tigers, it's return of the Champions Cup. Leicester Tigers, we are away at Leinster playing the Aviva on Saturday night. So I would say it's like England, Ireland, but probably on a bit of a budget though, Ben. I think with England, you fly out, you get to charter your own flight on the Thursday, stay out, pitch walk on a Friday, you get to lap up Dublin, that kind of stuff. You play the game and then you fly at home, or you fly charter jet, you fly home when you want. I think this weekend, flying commercial from one spot, returning 4 p.m. on Sunday to another spot, and it's we're playing an international team, but a bit more humbling experience, I'd say.
Yeah,
but which is fine.
Do you reckon we'll be in the back of the plane? You know, all the tall lads will probably want front row seats, but do you reckon the team manager's booked us in early, you know, and you like check in online early and you choose your seat?
I will look forward to this, because yeah, you've got all the second rows that want the sort of like the exit aisles a bit length, and I would love it if there's just like some 5 foot tall person that's got there first and booked their like exit row. There's just these massive second rows with like their knees around their ears, just sat in a seat in a deep squat, like, oh, can we swap? No, I've paid for this. So I'd also quite like the when we're flying, normally if you charter a flight, you get to pick the sort of, I say the menu, but there's like wraps and stuff, and the nutritionist comes down and they're pre-given to the cabin crew. It's distributed to the team. When we fly a commercial, I'm looking forward to who's going to get the credit card out and start buying the snacks for the lads.
I love that.
I will have that pack of ready salt with crisps, please. And a Ginster's pasty pre-game.
A couple of away trips. Can you remember when one of the S&C coaches was holding the box of popcorn? And another lad that I shall not be named, but he's mentioned a lot in this pod, came up behind him and pulled his pants and trousers down and stood on them so he couldn't move anywhere and he couldn't pull them up. Basically,
yeah,
we were in the queue. The S&C coach is holding all this popcorn in a big cardboard box. He stood there minding his own business. He comes up behind him, kegs him, pulls his trousers down, swipes his pants down, stands in between the gap, because obviously feet are apart, stands in that gap so he can't pull them back up. He can't put his popcorn down. Oh my God, he was raging. He was absolutely...
It took him months to get over that, didn't it? That player did not get forgiven for like the entire season. Oh, genius.
There was another one where one of the Italian lads had got onto the... He started speaking, like, we're just walking through the airport, and then all of a sudden you could hear Tiziano speaking down this, like, coming out of the main speakers.
It was like we're the only people in the airport, weren't we? Because it was like, the airport pretty much closed, and our flight was the last one, but they would let some of the staff were just letting boys go on the tannoy, and it was just like, Smithy's pants on fire! But throughout the entire airport, but yeah, it was...
Oh...
Random, wasn't it?
Right, we've got a question from Lucy. Dan knows about NFL, and he does. He does know a lot about the NFL. Can he explain to the listeners what happens next for Lewis Rees-Zammit?
Well, Ben, I believe he has signed a contract. He has signed a contract with the Super Bowl champions, the Kansas City Chiefs. With the NFL at the minute, they're in the off-season. In the regular season, you're allowed 53 players on your active roster, and I think you can have, I think it's 16 on a practice squad. But now the squads have been extended to 90 because it's time for, you bring a load of trialists, you've got training camps and stuff moving forward, so he's in the part of a wider squad. It'll be interesting how he goes, because recently the NFL has changed the sort of, to make the kickoffs more safe, they've changed the kickoffs a lot, so they've brought, like, they're not going to have the massive run-ups. The kicker's still going to kick it from deep, but the defending team is going to start on, like, the 35-yard line and the offense on the 30-yard line, so there's not a big run-up. They're literally 5 yards apart. So it'd be interesting if Kansas have decided that he's a bit of a niche player in regards to, he knows operating in small spaces, kick returns. It's probably going to be a bit more random rather than this sort of NFL traditional, you run here, you do this, this block's going here. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. I think it's probably in this, the rule change might actually help him move further along than previous.
So at this stage, is he in the same scenario Christian Wade was in? Obviously, Christian Wade went to the Buffalo Bills. So right now, is he par for par of where he was at in his journey?
I think he's on the sort of 90-man roster. The thing is, as you go forward through the, I think they've got like mini camps, and I don't think he's going to meet Pat Mahomes yet, but I think they have like mini camps, team workouts, and rookies and first-year players can come in. Then I think it's more like sort of May, June time, I think, is when they actually start coming together for organised team activities, OTA is what they call, when the whole team comes together. So as they get nearer the season, that's when the team gets reduced down from 90 down to 53. But I think this year, every team can have a 17th international player now, and they will obviously train with the squad all the time. So I think he's probably guaranteed to be, he's like a freebie in some regards. They obviously still pay him, but in terms of like the roster spot, he's not going to compete against each other. He's had his own sort of roster spot, so he should stick with the Kansas, yeah, for the season, I would say.
And that's when he'll obviously meet Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And then how far away is he from hanging out with Taylor Swift, mate?
Well, the Chiefs, I think their off-season starts in middle of April, and I think they have the draft at the end of April, and they basically think that's just practice. But the American football's very controlled in regards to coaches aren't allowed to sort of train players. There's no contact. It's all just sort of fitness drills and a bit of sort of positioning. But I don't think like coaches are even allowed to talk to players at the minute. I think it's all basically S&C coach, and that's about it. End of May is probably when he meets. I think they get like 3 or 4 days together every week, and that's when he'll probably meet Mahomes and all the rest of the superstars. But yeah, that'll be when he sort of probably is in the thick of it.
So I've got a sort of question really regarding it. So the Chiefs obviously really good, won the Super Bowl again. Does that make the next step harder for him? Where would he have more of a chance of making it in the squad he joined in, let's say, a worse NFL team?
I don't know really. I guess in some regards it probably might make it easier because they're good. So it's like we can carry him and like we can take a bit of a risk in regards to, we're not expecting him to, because we've got 50 brilliant players, he can be our sort of 51st or 53rd player, whatever it is, and we're not expecting anything of him because we're already a good team. Whereas like with a bad team, they might just be like, oh, we can't spend time developing him because we need as many players that know what they're doing already. So I'd say probably in some regards it helps him. And I say with Mahomes and everything like that, he'll obviously be there'll be media interest around him, but Kansas City, I don't think at the minute he'll be the big draw. It's all about Kelce, Taylor Swift and Pat Mahomes, so he'll be able to fly under the radar and probably just get on with things, which would probably be quite useful.
What do you know about Kansas City, mate?
You know what's interesting about Kansas City? It's not in Kansas, Ben.
I just would not have known that until now, but now I do. Thank you for sharing that.
It's actually the largest city in the state of Missouri, so that's strange. Apparently it was Walt Disney's, where he first started his animation company in Kansas. He called it Laugh-O-Gram Studios, and that's where he designed Mickey Mouse. So we've got Kansas City to thank for all that. Obviously, he quickly dropped it and moved to California, whatever he did, but anyway. TripAdvisor recommends a Steamboat Museum and the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures.
There we go.
And then Kansas is probably most famous for The Wizard of Oz. And that was released in 1939, which is... You've watched Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, I just find it a bit creepy, that old one.
It did scare... Like, as a kid, it used to be on like every Christmas time. And it was just scary, A, the witches, and B, like those flying monkey things. And it was just... Yeah, it was quite scary. Now you watch it, you're like, this is budget. But obviously, back then, it was like one of the greatest movies of all time. It's such a, like, not a snobby thing this other day. It's like, kids today have got it so virtual reality, augmented reality, like, computer games that are so realistic. They haven't lived, mate. Like, we got the tail end of it, like, when we were growing up. Like, you remember playing some arcade games and stuff, and they were crap. But now, it's a different world. The kids haven't lived.
They're like, what is a classic film for me? They're going to look back when the kids are old enough, I'll watch this one, this is a great... They're going to be like, this is rubbish. This is so bad.
Well, it's even like Lord of the Rings. Like, I remember watching it, and like they zoomed out and they're running across the mountains and stuff, and you're like, God, these graphics are a bit crap. Just slagging off the entire Lord of the Rings franchise. Sorry, Peter Jackson.
It's true, though, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, Kansas is probably most famous for the Wizard of Oz, which we've mentioned, but it's the line that Dorothy says, Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. I need to Google this and find out if she's in... Does she mean Kansas State or Kansas City? Most of the Wizard of Oz attractions seem to be in a place called Wamego, which is about 90 minutes from Kansas City, which I think is actually in Kansas State, not Missouri, but they're all trading on the name, so we'll just let them get away with it. But you'll find Dorothy's house in the Yellow Brick Road there. And it's also home to Oztoberfest. Well, you should Google it, Ben. You should just have a look for Oztoberfest. It'd probably freak you out a bit, to be honest.
If we obviously went... Well, if we... When we go to Kansas... Is there any other player, any other NFL player you'd love to sit down and chat to?
They have a defensive lineman called Chris Jones, who's just been paid about $25 million a year, and he's one of the best defensive linemen in the league. But if you Google him at the Combine, he's running, and they get all the free stash at the Combine. He's doing his 40-meter dash, and they got the free stash, and he put on a pair of, which he thought were Lycra shorts. It's actually a pair of boxer shorts. So he's running his 40-yard dash, and as he's crossing the line, his dick falls out of his pants, and he has to literally dive on the floor and hold his nuts. So
that's so good.
Not that I want to interview him for about that, but yeah, that's a bit of trivia. Yeah, no, there's plenty in Kansas. I'd love to just meet the offensive linemen or defensive linemen and just see what kind of big freak of human beings they are. Because we think we're athletic in rugby, and then you see like American football, so you get paid some of the players. Mahomes on $50 million a year, which is... 10 times the salary cap of the UK's rugby team. So it's like one player's getting that. It's like the disparities and the athletes you must get out there be phenomenal. So yeah, it would be lovely to get out there and see.
If we did a combine in rugby, what five events are we doing?
Well, you got to do the 100 kilo bench press, max reps.
100 kilo bench press, max reps. How long do you get to do it? How long have you got?
Well, as long as you want. Well, you can't rack it. As soon as you rack it, you finish, Ben.
Got you.
The best get like, I think the record's like 45, 46. I don't think anyone in rugby is getting near that, to be honest. But do that, like the 40-yard dash, or sort of 40, we'll call it a 40-meter sprint.
Yep.
Everyone wants to see a high jump, so a vertical jump, go broad jump, and then you could probably have some form of like agility drill, but I won't be partaking in any of them. The TV aspect of it in America, they've nailed it, whereas I think watching a load of us guys trying to accelerate, watching me do a 40-yard dash, actually probably get a good TV audience, but... For the wrong reasons.
Maybe in our off season, mate, we can do a little one.
In the off, you know, COVID off season, like the vertical jump, they do a broad jump, which you basically just jump as far out as you possibly can. And like the record's like 10 foot or something, daft like that, or 10 and a half foot. And even like the offensive lineman, the guys weigh 150 kilos, they're getting like 8 foot or 9 foot, something like that. I did it in my garage, and I got like 3.5.
Were you just curious to try it in the garage, mate? You just like get the measuring tape out?
Yeah, yeah, I was that. So I was in the garage. It was a bit dusty, so I didn't want to max myself out because I was a bit like, if I fall over here, I might hurt myself. So it wasn't done under proper lab gym conditions. But yeah, it was a starting point anyway. So I've only got to find another 6 foot. So I've only got to triple my current broad jump. Give me an off-season to work on it. Be all right. Right, we'll move on to some rugby stuff now, Ben. There's a question from Adam. With Danny Kerr retiring, which scrum halves should go on tour with England in the summer? Can Ben pick three?
Pick three, right. I would go, obviously, Alex Mitchell, Jack Van Portfleet, who's now fit. Again, great to see him back out there. So those two definite. And then I think it's probably a toss-up between Ben Spencer, who's been playing very well for Bath. You've got Harry Randall, who's a really busy nine and our rate as well. And you've got Rafi Quirk, who's now just got himself back fit again, who's had a terrible run of injuries. So I think the definites for me are Alex and JVP. And then it kind of depends on how they want to play. But if I'm going to pick one, I think if Rafi Quirk remains fit for the rest of the season and finds some form, then I think he goes as well. So there's your three, Mitch, JVP and Rafi Quirk. You know, they're not all the same type of player. They're all actually quite different in how they play. And that is also a great thing to have in terms of, you know, you want nines and you want all positions really to all have sort of a different way of playing, and it allows the team to then be adaptable in terms of what they want. You know, some will, out of those three, I mean, whoever you play is going to do a good job.
Nice, solid answer there, Ben. This question from Amy. Did you watch the England women against Wales? What did you think?
I did, Amy. I thought very impressive once again. 46-10. ran right really up front. They absolutely dominated the scrum. You can see the influence of Mitch coming through. You know, the first try was actually a cracker from England. So 10 hits Muir, like that shape off 10 of an arrowhead, but they just use it with two forwards this time. So hits Muir, they got a lead runner. It then goes out the back to Hurd, the centre, who then plays Packer short, who hits actually a great line, like all good sevens, like link play, but it actually hits the forward out the back to 12, turns the corner, plays Packer short, and then she sort of rides a tackle, does a hell of an offload, to be fair. Gives it to Abby Dow, who is lightning fast, bombs it down the outside, and actually it's almost annoying that she didn't finish it herself, because it would have been a hell of a try, like a real well worked, like off the training park sort of sequence of hitting that forwards, going out the back, the centre then trying to get it to width. Abby Dow gets it, puts the hammer down, unbelievably steps inside, like you think she's going to score for all love and money, but she doesn't. She just gets tackled just short. England go through one more phase, and Muir, who actually did a lovely little pass at the back of that pod, ends up crashing over from close range, but it's a fantastic team try. Big shout out to Ellie Kildun as well. Like her finish for the last try, three Welsh players literally tackling her into the goal line, and she just grounds the ball just in time, like a hell of a finish. But England, really, to be fair, were dominant, as they have been for a very long time. You know, record crowd outside of Twickenham, so that was brilliant to see. And really, you're looking at it and you're thinking, it's setting up nicely for an England-France finish of the tournament.
I like the way you've been watching it, Ben, and be the in-depth detail of knowledge you've got. Any particular reason?
Well, I'm a big fan of John Mitchell, who I get on very well with. And he's invited me to go into camp. So, you know, I'll be looking to do that hopefully in the next couple of weeks. Get down there and, you know, help where I can. And also, of course, Coley, Marley Packer, we did give a shout out on the pod, but from fellow Centurions, very well done.
So obviously we saw Jamie George went into camp, the women's camp, and helped the hookers with their throwing and certain skills. I'm guessing you'll go into camp to obviously work on box kicking, maybe some work around the base of the breakdown. Has John Mitchell given you a day? Because I'd recommend maybe trying to get it close to game day, maybe a Friday, see if they have any biscuits or goujons or any other traditions in the women's camp that you should probably have a look at, Ben.
It's a great shout, actually. I don't know what the Red Roses tradition is, and maybe they do have biscuits. So if we can time it, Coley, we can do it on a Friday, we can nip down there. You know, you could help with the goujons, the biscuits, or if they don't have it already, introduce them to the biscuits.
I'll be the taste inspector.
You can do taste inspector. But to be fair, Coley, their scrum was so dominant the weekend, mate, that I think if you go in, I think it'll be unsafe for the other team. But with France around the corner, I think that's maybe the week that we go in.
Question from Glenn. What did the Premiership clubs do during the Six Nations?
Well, Glenn, I can only speak on behalf of my club that I play for, but we had a little break. We played Harlequins at the end of January, so we had a little 10-day break then. And then we got back to it. We were sort of training either 3-day weeks or 4-day weeks, just working on a game. I mean, it allowed the bodies for a lot of guys to kind of get themselves right and do all that and work on all the aspects of your game that you want to kind of build on or grow more. I suppose one of the difficulties is the fact that you're still missing, you know, some key people in your squad. So with Leicester, we were obviously missing yourself, Coley, but also, you know, locks, we're missing two locks with George Martin and Ollie Chesham. You know, Tommy Raphael was away with Wales, you know, Freddie Stewart was away. So you're kind of missing some guys, and also you're patching up some other bodies. So I think some teams did some warm-up games, which I think, you know, we've said the Prem Cup, but for some teams they had, you know, fixtures and games almost to restart the season. It was a strange, I think for a lot of clubs, they probably look at it and go, what worked, what didn't, when they have to do it again next year, like what would you change, how would you change it? Because I think for everyone, everyone has the best intentions of, like, after that break of coming out of the blocks and, you know, for this remainder of the season, like being in great form and everything like that. But there's so many like moving parts to reach that.
Yeah, it's a weird season. It's sort of unprecedented, the fact that you have a Premiership, you had the World Cup, came back, players obviously integrated, played and off and on, and then this period now where there's no other time in my career I can think of where there's been this break in the middle of the season. And as you say, it's because the clubs don't know, never had it before, you don't really have data to go on about what to do with it. You want to freshen up the guys, because obviously halfway through a season you've still got six games to play when you come out the back of it, but you also need to get some good training in them. And it's kind of like, it's long enough for a pre-season, but then you're not starting from a pre-season. You've had sort of 3 or 4 weeks off, and then you do a pre-season. So you've got to say, bruised, tired bodies have played a season of rugby almost already. You want to give them 3 or 4 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks to recover, but then you need to peak physically for the rest of the season. So, yeah, it was a very strange time in the sort of, because also it's difficult for the clubs. Clubs are sort of like, we need to get players in, we need to train them, we need to do this, we need to do that. And it's unprecedented, really. And I guess if you actually look at the Premiership results the first 2 weeks, because then also, of course, your internationals come back who've had sort of been away, and it's, they're getting integrated back. So it's a strange one. I think you look at, say, Quinn's got sort of hammered by Saris, who then lost to Northampton, and then Quinn's beat Bath, well, beating them quite handily, and it's all, you know, we lost to Gloucester, who then lost, and then we beat Newcastle. It's all, past couple of weeks, is everyone sort of, as you say, prepared for, like, oh, we're going to sprint into the end of the season, six games, we're going to smash it, and everyone's up in the air a bit. It's a strange part of the year. It's exciting, because obviously everything's to play for, but it's strange, isn't it, to say the least?
It is strange, and like you say, and you've seen some results last week, and then almost flip around the following week. It's almost like last week was a pre-season game for teams, and then they found their, sort of found where they needed to be again this week. So it's a bit of a sprint, but it's but no, Glenn, it's interesting. I think it's new for everyone. It's been a long old season, and that break was definitely needed. But it's now, I suppose, you know, in a year's time, I think a lot of people have done some lessons around that as well. So we have a question from Paul. With Dan preparing for life after rugby, is he having to learn how Instagram works?
Well, Paul, no, I'm not. I still don't have a clue. Still, although I do have a Instagram site. Does he have a site? Do you have an Instagram page? I don't know what you have. An Instagram profile. That's what I've got. I've got one. Just trying to live the simple life. So here's a question from Neil. It's actually quite a very good question, Ben. It's, who are the best club sides of all time? Is modern day Leinster in the conversation?
Cool.
What are your thoughts, Ben?
They would be in the conversation, I guess. They have had a huge amount of success, definitely. But then you start looking at it in terms of the modern day, like Saracens have definitely got to be in there. And I'd say Saracens have had more success than Leinster. You look at Toulon, that 2012 to 15. You got the Crusaders, mate. I mean, even La Rochelle, to think that they weren't in the top 14. You know, they nearly did the double last year. They lost in the end with Romain Intermac scoring right at the end for Toulouse to snatch it. But they've won Europe the last 2 years in a row, which is like so hard to do. They've got to be like modern day. Are they in the conversation? Like Munster's, you can remember Munster as well. That Munster side, that, you know,
yeah.
Even Leicester, you know, that 1998 to 2002. But, you know, would you say that's the modern era? I wouldn't probably say that, but they were certainly a very successful team. They won 4 premierships and 2 European Cups during that period. That's a really great question. I think that is one for an in-depth podcast about that one, Coley, because that's a very hard question to answer. What's your thoughts?
They're definitely up there, aren't they? I think you have to look at, if you look at European Cup success, like, is the Leinster team now as good as the sort of O'Driscoll side that beat Ulster and beat Northampton, that kind of stuff in, you know, 2010-11, I think it was, that kind of period?
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got those Toulon sides, like, for me, the sort of Galacticos of, I don't know if they could be beaten in some regards. I mean, I know they only scraped the final against Clermont that year, but when you got Wilkinson, people like Mitchell, Habana, Sheridan, Heyman, Gitto, Backes Bota, Juan Smith, you got those sort of Galacticos of names, you're like, we should probably go away and do some research and actually come back with an answer. Because as well, you got to think about, like, domestically, how the teams did, because I would say the Saracen sides that sort of won Europe and won the Premiership, I would say it is harder for them, even with the certain things they did off the field, than say a Leinster potentially, because obviously Leinster are geared towards big games and in Europe, and some of the top 14, the French sides that can go on and win that, you know, like the Toulouse teams of recent years, you look at it, and even La Rochelle, to sort of compete on two fronts, you need a good squad and you need a fantastic set of players. So it's a tough one, and I say it'd be, and that's just looking at Europe. I say you look at the Crusader sides of yesteryear, and, well, not yesteryear, but you look at the Crusader sides, they all seem to be good, but the Crusaders go through periods of dominating rugby, and obviously that feeds into the All Blacks, and the All Blacks are, as we know, really good at rugby. So it's a very interesting thing. Even like you go back to sort of some of the South African teams, I know they're probably not as dominant as they were now, but like growing up watching the Bulls and stuff like that in Super Rugby, you're kind of like, it'd be an interesting podcast, and I guess we'd probably to have a think about.
I agree. I'd say, like, off the top of my head, but I'd have to do more research, so don't hold me to it. But Saracens, like you say, I think for me, they've got to be, probably, winning the Premiership. It's extremely hard to do. Then Europe, the amount of Europes they won. You know, they're fighting on all fronts, and the league is very competitive. I think that's what they did was pretty remarkable, really. And like you say, Cody, even you go back to South African teams, you know, the Bulls winning it 3 times, you've got the Brumbies and 01 to 2004, you got, yeah, we need like a cut-off date, but I'd love to, like, listeners, get in touch, tell us what you think. Who do you think? Yeah, it's a great question from Neil. Like, in the modern day, you know, who is the greatest club side. Who's been the best club side?
You've got to say Clermont at one point. I think they had like 74 games unbeaten at home in Europe and things like that. Like they didn't win necessarily trophies, but they were a remarkable team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were a remarkable team.
Clermont reached three finals, three European finals, and lost all three of them. I mean, they lost to Sarries, and they lost to Toulon twice, whatever it is, and I think they won the French league, like, once.
Yeah.
They've lost 10 finals or something like that. But as you say, to reach 10 finals, you don't just fluke it, so you've got to be good and to play so many games at home and dominate so many games at home. Can you define that Clermont team that probably had 5-6 years of being brilliant but fought the final hurdle? Maybe not one of the greatest teams of all time, but can they be defined by 80 minutes or, you know, 10-minute, 20-minute period in a final which they end up losing? Does that define them over 6 years of dominance? You know what I mean? So, yes, yeah, it's a great question. And it's great. It'd be really interesting to peel back and have a look into it.
Well, that is the debate, isn't it? Because I look at that Clermont team and think they were phenomenal, but they didn't necessarily have the silverware to confirm their dominance. But equally, we all know when it comes down to one game, like one-off game, like anything can happen. And
you could say with those Clermont teams, it's similar to, say, a Leinster now. Is Leinster have been in, you know, they lost to La Rochelle the past couple of years. They lost to Saracens. I know they sort of have won ones in the past, but you actually look, you say Leinster are one of the best teams of all time and dominant, but over the past 5 years, they've lost three of the Champions Cup finals, but it doesn't make them a bad team. They're still a great team. Similar to that Clermont question, is like, just because you reach the finals and you lose, you're not a, you're still a brilliant team. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting thought exercise to have.
Right, well, that gives us a focus then, Coley. A plan for the next month. By the end of April, we will pick our top 10 sides for the modern era. We've just got to work out when the modern era starts. You pick 10, I'll pick 10. We'll do our homework and we'll come up with a proper list. It'll be great.
Perfect.
Get in touch at Love of Rugby. Send us your suggestions. We're off to Dublin on a Ryanair flight.
Yes, we'll say we'll get a... The Monday pod will be coming hot off the presses. We are flying back Sunday from Leinster, so literally as soon as we touch down and land, we'll say hello to our families and then basically give the latest intel into what's going on in the world of commercial flights. For the love of rugby.
If you want to drop us a line, get involved with our socials.
Just search for @loveofrugby. And if you've listened to all our episodes and need another podcast, go and find Joe Marler's Things People Do. For the Love of Rugby is ad-free on Amazon Music. If you listen on Apple, you get it ad-free for £1 a week.
See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.